Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Chris Bodie. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening, spending the time with me. This is the Becoming a Great Dad podcast. I cannot believe we are already in September. You know, sometimes like in the beginning of the year when you're like, man, what did I do in like April, February? Like those months just fly by. And we are now in the latter part of the year. I know the latter part of the year for my family is we got a bunch of birthdays and holidays. So this is kind of like the golden time for us. So bear with me. I hope I can keep up a good schedule on the podcast. Today I want to talk about, and the topic of today is going to be about how to protect our kids against racial injustice. You know, this comes off the heels of just another black man being murdered in the streets by police. And I don't know how to, I guess, get my feelings and words out. And I figured that the podcast would be a good platform for me to talk directly to dads and also moms about how do we protect our kids during this time. And look, this you know, this episode is not going to only be for black people. This episode is really for everybody. So if you want to know how you can help or do more for this cause, definitely listen up. Pass this podcast around. I'm gonna try to give some really good information to you guys. So we're going to talk about I'm gonna break it down in two different segments. One is I'm going to kind of teach three pillars that we can use to teach our kids to fight against racial injustice. And then the kind of second segment, we're going to talk about how to help your kids manage their emotions on this topic. So let's get into this first segment. And I think I'm going to kind of situate this and say three pillars, right? You could say three pillars, three ways. Again, look, I'm sure there are more than three. I'm going to give you three things that I currently do and use. But hey, if you have some other suggestions, feel free to leave a message to me on a podcast, on a website. Definitely want more information. But these are kind of three pillars of how we can teach our kids to fight against racial injustice. The first thing is we got to be mindful of the teaching in our household. Now, as parents, right, we have to do two things. One, I think we have to check our own personal beliefs, and then we also got to check our mouths at the door. And this kind of ties back into our family values. You know, I think I talked about that on a podcast a while back about building a strong family culture, right? And what it means to really have a culture where, you know, as a family, we treat people equally, fairly. And what does that mean? And because of our personal beliefs, you know, we have to understand that, like, our personal beliefs as parents are sometimes skewed by either our parents or either by our grandparents. And we have to watch that those beliefs don't spill out of our mouths. And guess who's going to pick that up? Our children. Let me give you an actual example. Y'all know I like to give you a visual example and not just explain it. But my grandfather called him Papa. My grandfather was a dark brown man, right? And he grew up, I think he was born in the 1930s. Grandfather passed away, I want to say, in the early 2000s. But he was in a time period where he definitely experienced racism growing up. Now, my grandmother was fair-skinned, what we in New Orleans would call light-skinned. And she could pass as white. She was telling me a story one time about how, so when they first got together, right, and they used to date, my grandmother was able to go in the front of the deli, right, and she would take his money to go buy them sandwiches, but she could not eat in the deli with him. She had to go in the deli, buy the sandwiches, leave out the deli, and they had to go around the back of the deli to sit on the stoop to eat them, right? Because her being fair-skinned, she could pass as white. And of course, they didn't allow blacks to go in that deli and eat there. So again, that's just one of the stories that they told me, you know, when they were dating, okay? I'm sure there's a bunch of other stuff that happened to them. So you can imagine, my grandfather grew up during a time when the world was openly racist toward him. And so you have to understand, he more than likely, I'm sure, had a certain disdain and distrust of white people. I can remember when I was younger, we were somewhere and it was a crowd of white people. And I think I heard him say honky or just some slur against whites under his breath. Now, as I got older, I understood that my grandfather's disdain was probably either taught to him or it was because of the way he was treated. Now, does it make it right? No, he was definitely wrong. He should not be going around calling anybody white people out of their names, right? But you see, he used that word out of anger, you know? And so the way he thought and his belief, right, was kind of shaped. And me being a young kid, I spent a lot of time with my grandparents, right? Inadvertently, I indirectly picked up on that disdain and anger. And then hearing him say certain words, I also thought that that was okay. Now, I didn't go around saying that, but again, right, I thought that that was okay. And in the black community, I know sometimes, you know, we do talk about people and it just comes off our tongue because we have maybe seen our grandparents and our parents, you know, talk about it. But what happens if let's say you were wronged by a group of people or a race of people, you growing up believed that, and then let's say in your own household, you start to use the slur. What do you think is going to happen in terms of your kids? I saw there was a funny meme one time where this guy said, man, you can say please and thank you all the time around a 2-year-old, but let you say motherfucker once and you're screwed. Like they will repeat that every day. So when I say the teaching starts in a household, I'm talking about, you know, first we need to understand, like, hey, where do my beliefs come from about certain things? And are they skewed based on, you know, my past, my environment, my parents, for me, my grandparents? And am I letting my mouth say things that I really don't want my kids to say or pick up? Right? Now, my household, I think for us, when we kind of go back and talk about, you know, values and beliefs, we have some kind of pretty common, I think, beliefs and values that, one, we do not judge people based on their race, their background, sexuality. You know, we want to make sure, Toy and I, that we set the beliefs in our household, that the beliefs of our, you know, parents are not kind of bleeding over into the household because maybe those beliefs aren't the right ones. But we also want to make sure that what's coming out of our mouth, even in times of anger and frustration toward something that's happening, is not spewing out or spitting out hatred. Now, the second block in this pillar is we have to teach our kids about situational awareness. Now, what is that? That's really more of a military term. You don't hear people say that often, but it's really what it sounds like, right? It is being aware of your environment or your situation around you. I had a coworker tell me one time, I don't see race, you know? And I told her, no, you need to see race, because green people are not getting killed in the streets. And so for so long, we tried to say, you know, people don't look at racial injustice. Well, we need to start looking at this and looking at the problem that, yes, African-Americans, black men and women are being treated unjust. You know, we are not at a point where they are being treated fair and equal, right? That's going to take time. It's a process. I personally think that is a process of acceptance by the country, healing, education, and change. So until we get there, in the meantime, we need to teach our kids about being aware of their surroundings and when certain things happen. I'll give you a great example. Chris, he's 14 now. But when he was younger, around maybe 12 and 13, he would just want to hop on his bike and just ride around the neighborhood, right? And we had to explain to him, okay, son, listen, you know, as a young black boy, you need to make sure of the following. You need to make sure that, you know, you are like properly dressed, and properly dressed meaning like, have on socks, shoes, pants, shirt. He likes to wear white beaters. I hate white beaters. I hate even the name of that, but he basically wears tank tops. Look, you don't need to be riding around with hoodies on. People need to be, see a face. If someone stops you, you need to tell them, hey, I'm calling my parents because I'm not feeling safe talking to an adult, and being mindful of where you're riding. You know, he just can't frolic around the neighborhood like anybody else. And yes, I know that's sad to say. I know that we feel like our children should be able to do that, but I need him as a young black boy to be aware of his surroundings. Same thing for my daughters, right? Heaven, and this just happened recently, but she got into a little car accident, minor accident. Everything's fine. But it happened in the morning time. She called us, and immediately we went out to her, right? Now, we were just dressed, Toya and I, in like, I think I maybe had like, I don't know, some pajama pants on and a shirt that was missing a sleeve. It's Saturday morning, y'all, so, okay, you know, bear with me. I forget what Toya had on, but the first thing we did was, before we grabbed keys, we changed our clothes. I think I put on some jeans, some pants. I put on a fresh shirt. She went and put a dress on, put her wedding ring on. Because again, we understand situational awareness. If we show up to that scene and I show up as a black man in pajama pants and a raggedy t-shirt, and she shows up, you know, as a black woman, we are going to get judged. You know, she even made a comment about wearing her wedding ring because, yeah, somebody could look at her and be like, oh, she's just a single, whatever, like, you know. So like things like that. And my daughter, you know, she carries herself well, but she needs to know that when she's interacting with police, like she did at the accident, whether she's at school, for internships, she needs to be aware of the surroundings, basically reading the room. And we need to teach our kids to read the room very, very early on. And then that third pillar is, and this just isn't for, I think, racial stuff, right? I think this is for sexism or for bigotry, but that third pillar is, you really have to show them how to face it head on. Now, this is something I know I started doing early in my career. If you know me, I work in the technology field. I'm also creative. And as a young black man, I have dealt with not only racism, but also ageism, right? And showing them how to face it head on, what I mean by that is showing them how not to deflect it, but how to put the spotlight on it. And let's go to story time, okay? So this happened to me maybe some months ago. I was at work. I won't name the lady who did this to me, but I was talking to her over the phone, and we were trying to get a new project set up, you know, and we just had some phone conversations for some weeks. And then once the project started, I was going to go out to their new building, their new site. Now, the new site wasn't fully constructed yet. So instead of wearing suit and tie, I went out there kind of more casual, button down shirt, sleeves rolled up jeans. Right. And when she saw me, first of all, I walked in. I said, "Hey, how you doing? Blankety blank." You know her name. And she said, "Oh, you're Chris?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Oh, I didn't expect you to look like that." Problem one. Then she said, "Oh, I thought you would be more professional because of how we talked on the phone." Problem two. And then she said, "Oh," and then I think she called me by another coworker's name, who is my employee, who's also black. Problem three. So what normally what I would have done in my earlier years is just deflect that. "Oh, it's okay. Oh, no, I'm me." Da-da-da-da-da, right? But not anymore, right? What I did was I put the spotlight on that, because what she was really saying was, "Oh, you were so well spoken over the phone. I didn't expect this young black guy to show up. Oh, I thought you were going to be more professional." You know, that's what she was really saying, right? And I was able to easily transcribe what she was saying. And again, I mean, you know, my coworkers, I can tell them apart no matter what color they are. So I'm not going to confuse one co-white worker for another. And she had worked there long enough to know the difference between myself and the other guy. And so putting the spotlight, I said, "Your comments just now made me feel uncomfortable." I said, "Were you expecting someone else older or just different color or race? Because I talked to you over the phone." I said, "You know, as a black man, I hear that a lot. And those type of comments, they're insensitive to me." I said, "Also, my name is Christopher Bodie. I am da 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 da. My employee name is so-and-so and so-and-so," right? I didn't deflect. I basically caught that and basically put the spotlight back on her. And what that does is that tells the other person, "Hey, we're not going to play this game anymore. You are not going to play the, oh, we all look alike game, or, oh, you were well, or the, you were so well spoken game, I didn't think you were like the other blacks," right? And when you put the spotlight on somebody, and she crumbled, right? She apologized. I haven't had an issue with that coworker again, right? Now, I did it in a very professional manner, right? I didn't get flip or sassy or smart, but that's the kind of spotlighting. That's how we need to show our children how to face it head on, right? And now I did that in a more professional work environment. But if they get used to doing that, whether it's in school or whether it is at work, you know, that is, I think, another tactic that they can start now to use throughout their life.
You know, incarceration rates in America has been a problem, especially as opposed to minorities. And Roman delves into this, the issues around the legal system. Do you think we've made any headway
And I think it's more important to make headway in our own house. By the time the system comes into play, the damage is done. They're not locking up 7-year-olds. Yeah. It starts in the house. It starts in the home. And yeah, well, my father got locked up. Well, where was his father?
Yeah.
You know, I did talk about my three closest friends, and they did, you know, 15 to 25. One did 28, this and that. I was the only one of the three that had a father in my life, even though my parents were together. But I still had a father who was a gentle man and a good example, yeah. And they didn't. We can blame the system if we want, but they didn't lock any of us up at 7.
Yeah.
We were all doing enough to get locked up at 13. My parents sent me in another direction. They didn't have anybody to help them, and they kept doing what they was doing, and the system got them. So I don't. The system is rigged, but why? All the more reason not to help it.
Those were just a few words by the great Denzel Washington. I think he kind of echoes the statements I was making earlier about, you know, this stuff really starts at home in a household. So let's talk about, I guess the next kind of big thought in this thing for me is how to help your kids manage their emotions. And this popped out to me because Chris came home, and this was from, you know, school, and you know, he's a teenage boy, right? So he's normally quiet, but I went in his room, and this was maybe like midday, and he had like all the lights off. He was in a bed asleep, right? Which was kind of unusual, because, you know, he had chores to do. And I said, "Hey, Chris, you know, like, what's going on? What's like that?" And so in talking to him, he explained to me that he was having a bad day. And I was like, "Okay, son, like, what's, you know, what is about your day?" And he told me that, and I forget who the young man recently that was, I think, shot 7 times by the police. But he told me that he had been reading about it and seeing it, and he felt upset. He felt angry. He just felt some way about it. And it really dawned on me and hit me that, wait a minute, like, our kids have access to this news, these pictures, these videos. And so they have emotions that are churning inside of them, right? The same way as adults, we see this stuff and we get angry about it. So are our children, right? And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Like I didn't even like realize that. And I need to find a way that we can have a healthy conversation about that, so you don't hold on to that animosity or that anger at 14. And when you get older, not know that you have a disdain or anger for people from nowhere. So when we talk about how to manage emotions, again, these are just a couple things that we are going to incorporate or that we do now with the family. The first one, I think, is the easiest one, is just to talk to them. Just simply talk. Now, I think sometimes with our kids, like, it's hard to talk to them because, you know, we don't know, like, what platform to use to talk to them. Like, you know, like with little Chris, you know, I can't just walk into him and say, "Hey, Chris, how do you feel about the recent shootings happening in America?" Like, my son gonna be like, "Dad, like, it blows." Like, all right. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the platform that we use is family meetings. Now, I'm definitely going to do a whole podcast episode pretty soon, strictly around family meetings, the importance of them, how to lead one. I think we've been having family meetings for maybe 2 or 3 years now. And we kind of have them at least once or twice a month. But these family meetings are a great platform to, you know, just, you know, to not only talk about family stuff, but to kind of have an open dialogue with the kids and the family about what's going on. I will admit, Toya is a way better communicator with the kids. And when she's talking about stuff, she's asking them a lot of why questions, you know. Like she'll say, well, what do you think about what's going on and why? You know, she'll ask them like, well, what if that same thing happened to you? How would you react? Or how does it make you feel? Why does it make you feel that way? You know, so you just don't have like these one word answers, like you having your kids actually think about it. And this tactic works again with an older child, 21, 14, even Tato, who's 7. Tato is very emotionally intelligent, right? So like, you know, so when you ask him why, homeboy gonna tell you why, okay? But talking to them, I think them being able to express his emotions and using the platform of a family meeting, and you don't have to say, all right, kids, family meeting today, we're gonna talk about racial rights. No. You can just say, look, guys, we're gonna start having family meetings the way we do it. For example, like I'll bring up like, hey guys, look, like this month in September, we have these family events to do. I'll then go around and do like some highlights, like, hey, like Heaven got an A this month in class, or Chris is starting baseball, right? Or Tato was able to start virtual school, right? And then I'll kind of squeeze in, so look, like, let's kind of talk about some stuff going on in America. You know what I'm saying? I'll kind of slide that into the conversation of the family meeting. The other thing that you can do to help them manage the emotions is you want to help them develop a sense of pride, right? A sense of pride around being Black. You know, I was taught that Black history is American history, right? So as parents, as Black parents, you know, we have to do a better job of trying to incorporate Black history and teaching them year round. And that is definitely something I know after Juneteenth, this year, Toya said, babe, we got to do a better job of incorporating Black history. Just doing that every opportunity we get, right? This year, for example, one of the things we did was we never really celebrated Juneteenth, right? But we had a big calling on us this year. Look, Juneteenth, we're going to get outside, we're going to barbecue, we're going to have a good time. And here's actually a clip from Juneteenth I'm going to play for you guys. The kids and I were kind of all in the kitchen and living room. And just to kind of mix it up, right, I went and read a bunch of facts about Juneteenth. And so I started to like almost pop quiz them on Juneteenth just to make it fun.
All right. One last question before we go into the history lesson. One last question. In what state is Juneteenth not considered an actual holiday?
Ooh.
Alabama.
But that's not fair. That just all happened, right?
Alabama. No. And I'll give y'all a hint. There's only five.
What is Alabama?
It is only five states.
What is Alabama? Mississippi.
Need four more, Heaven.
Georgia.
What is Iowa?
Three more. You close.
What is Idaho?
Two more.
What is
Oklahoma?
Kansas. What is Indiana?
Nope.
What is Minnesota?
Nope.
What is
two more? Come on, hurry up.
What are the
they in the north? They in the north.
What is Washington?
Nope.
What is
Virginia?
North Carolina?
Africa? What is South Carolina?
Nope.
What is
all right, we got four. One
what
more.
What is Massachusetts?
The funny thing I think about that, and the ironic thing, is that my kids love like when I just do stupid stuff, like test them and quiz them. Like you'll hear they got into it. They also think I am super smart. They thought I knew about Juneteenth, and I literally woke up the morning of Juneteenth, read a bunch of facts, crammed it in my head, And then say, yeah, let me tell you about Juneteenth, kids, right? But hey, however we need to get this knowledge to them, do it, right? But again, that just doing that, and we're going to continue every year, doing something like that helps them develop a good sense of pride around being a Black person. I think another thing that we can do as parents, we can start to teach our kids about local Black heroes, right? Yes, we know about Dr. King and Rosa Parks, okay? But what about the other Black heroes who no one talks about, right? Like, for example, in New Orleans, we have a place called Congo Square. I think that's like right on the edge of Armstrong Park in the French Quarter. On Sundays, this is where the slaves would come on their off days and they would socialize, they would congregate, they would play music. That site is just rich in energy and culture, right? So stuff like that, you know, we want to teach our kids. And wherever you are at in your city or town, I'm sure there is some Black history, or you can probably drive a little bit to get to it. I think the other thing too is that with COVID and with kids staying at home, right, there's a lot of more, I guess I could say, homeschooling, or more parents are really, I hope, kind of in the kids' school more. And so one thing you can do is you can ask the teacher, or if it's not on the approved book list, do it yourself. Ask them, hey, can my child for their book report do a book report on a Black book, or a Black author, or a Black poet, try to incorporate more African-American literature in their studies. Now, I know in history class coming up, for example, I learned and read from textbooks from a lot of white scholars, okay? I know we read Mark Twain, Charles Dickerson, William Shakespeare, and I went actually to an all-Black, all-boys school, right? We never read Langston Hughes. We didn't read Toni Morrison. I think I might have read a couple passages from Maya Angelou. But again, these are things that we should be exposing our kids to. I read a report that said that, I think it said every 8 out of 10 books in New York City that students have in the classroom from preschool to 8th grade are written by white authors. So I'm advocating that, yes, students definitely should still read those literary classic books, right? But what I'm saying is that we should introduce our kids to texts by Black authors that speak to Black experiences from the Black perspective. And they're going to be able to see the accomplishments that Black people have done. And the great thing about it is that these authors remind our kids that, look, Black excellence is not confined to sports and entertainment, right? We have literary scholars and academic scholars who are talking about Black excellence that our children need to read. And then the third thing I would say also is, and this sounds easy, but it's really something I think parents that we have to work on, but we got to be an example. You know, we have to be an example, and that means voting. That means donating to causes. That means volunteering. I make it a point, for example, for Heaven and Toya, when there is any kind of voting coming up, whether it's local, parish, city, whatever like that, I'm texting them and sending them literature like, hey, y'all, this is coming up. Hey, y'all, early voting the day of. Hey, everybody, make sure we get to the polls by 8 o'clock and vote, right? I'm calling them, hey, Heaven, did you vote? You know, like that. But definitely be an example. And also, there's a lot of things now that I think we can expose our kids to, just video wise and movie wise. For example, Netflix has a great thing I saw now. I believe it's called Bookmarks, and I think it's called Bookmarks Celebrating Black Voices. And what this is Black, I think, actors and activists and they're reading books from African-American authors. Like, I think one has, like, Common reading it. I'm sorry, I can't remember other people. But again, that is something that a year ago was not on Netflix. And that is a great example of, if you don't have time to soak up facts about Juneteenth, or let's say like your kid is young and not reading yet, right? Just sitting and watching a Netflix movie or series can be helpful. Now, I said earlier in the podcast that, you know, this is not just for, you know, Black people and parents. This is for everybody. And I'll say this again, that, you know, you can look at those three pillars and you can incorporate them in your household, right? You can teach your kids about values and beliefs and not letting racial things come out their mouths. You can teach them about being aware of, you know, not being Black, obviously, but being aware of, I would say, mistreatment and how to stand up against that. And even facing it head on, you know, being like, hey, wait a minute, that's not right. You shouldn't be making fun of that kid or judging him or her for whatever, right? And I'm going to say something about that, right? To my non-Black friends, hey, here's the thing. You guys can no longer sit on the sidelines, right? We need you to be an active participant of what's going on. You know, we need you to have the same awareness for us, and we need you to help us face it head on as well too. And the only way that will, again, change if you do that for yourself, but then you teach that to your children. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, my name is Chris Bode, and I'm your host on Becoming a Great Dad podcast. I'm so excited to announce our new merchandise line called The Great Dad Society. The Great Dad Society is a signature collection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, mugs, and more. And this is all made for dads. This is apparel that any father would love to have, and it makes a great gift for the dad in your life. Feel free to check it out on my site, chrisabody.com/store. That's chrisabody.com/store. Again, that's the Great Dad Society collection. Check it out today.
So I hope this podcast episode was valuable to you. You know, this was not, for me, a jovial, happy podcast. You know, this was heavy on my heart for a while. So I really hope I gave you some good information that you can take back with you. As far as your action item, I would say either start with those three pillars, right, of the teaching, of the awareness, and facing that head on. I mean, and really those three pillars are all around teaching, right? And that, I mean, that goes back to, I think, the very first podcast we talked about the five skills all great dads should have, and one of them is being a teacher. Or the second action item is try to see how you can incorporate, either through books, movies, entertainment, family meetings, how you can incorporate Black excellence and how we can start to teach our kids about the Black people, the ones we don't know about that have done great for the world. So that's all I got for you this episode. It is late. I'm in my studio. I'm a little sweaty. I am tired. I wrote those notes out for the podcast 2 days ago, and I'm just now around to getting to doing them, and I will probably edit it hopefully tonight or tomorrow and put it out there. So again, as always, thank you for listening. You know, I appreciate the support from people. You know, I'm hearing feedback that folks love the podcast. So again, thank you so much. You can find the podcast and other episodes on becomingagreatdad.com. You can also get the episodes on Apple, Google, Spotify, and you can also find us on anchor.fm/becomingagreatdad. So until next time, I'll talk to you later. Hope you and your families are keeping safe. Take care.